Hello and welcome once again to The Blueprint. It is Canada's Conservative Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Schmail, Member of Parliament for Halliburton Kawartha Lakes Brock. Thank you very much for joining us once again. We are not stopping. Even though we are leading up to the Christmas holidays, we will continue with new content each and every Tuesday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So I thank you for joining us today, because today we have a very, very special guest. I'll keep you just in suspense for 2 seconds as I remind you. As always, please like, comment, subscribe, share this program. Help us push back against the ever-moving Liberal agenda. If you can't watch us all today on Facebook, please download us on platforms like CastBox, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, you name it, it's out there. And that way there might be a friend, a neighbor, a relative that you know on your social media platforms that may not have access to the conservative message that might be open to hearing this conservative message. That's why we need your help to do that. And like I said, today's guest is someone I bet you've been waiting for the whole year long. Aaron O'Toole, the leader of Canada's Conservatives, the Member of Parliament for Durham, my next door neighbor. Thank you very much for joining us.
It's great to be with you, Jamie, and I'm glad I finally make my debut on The Blueprint. This is exciting.
You've been a busy person, so we completely understand. Now, congratulations on winning the leadership. I know we talked about it a lot on the show. And you've been working very hard lately to kind of assemble the team and fight against the Liberals and also prepare for the next election. And then you unfortunately contracted COVID, which kind of was an interesting experience for you. Maybe can we start with that? Because that's something a lot of people ask me about, even on the street, just what it was like for you as a new leader having to deal with that.
Yes, I get asked about that a lot as well, Jamie. You know, here's my debut as the Conservative leader. My victory because of ballot problems was at 1:30 in the morning. So I gave a speech at 1:30 in the morning to a largely empty room. Now my kids and my parents and my wife, Rebecca, were there, and it was such an honor. And I said, I would have waited till morning sunrise to give that speech. It's such an honor to lead Canada's founding party. And then I started in the regular course, got teamed together, started to go on the road a bit. And then in my first month, I got COVID. And fortunately, I had a mild case. I unfortunately did bring it home, and Rebecca came down with COVID as well. Our children, miraculously, Molly and Jack, avoided getting it. We social distanced in our home. Rebecca had what I would say would be a traditional flu. I had very mild symptoms. So we were very lucky, and we had great support from public health. But it was perspective for us. Like, we were in a lineup with hundreds and hundreds of people that got turned away after we were there for several hours. So I got to experience the fact that because we didn't have rapid tests as quickly as Europe, we saw huge backlogs, a lot of uncertainty. So I at least have that perspective, which as a leader, if you've walked a few miles in people's shoes, you can relate to them. So we use it as a learning. But I think my wife will be reminding me of for the next 60 years, how I brought COVID into our home right after the leadership.
Since a lot of the provinces are dealing with new restrictions to deal with the COVID pandemic, maybe let's build on what you just said about the rapid tests. And this is something you and members of our team, including our health critic, Michelle Rempel, have been pushing for, is faster movement from Health Canada on approving rapid tests, many of which are already in operation in countries like the European Union, often known as the gold standard, and the United States, but some not here in Canada.
Yes, in fact, what I did in one of my first questions in the House of Commons when I did come back from COVID was remind Mr. Trudeau, our European trade deal allows us to actually accept regulatory approval for things like diagnostic tests as part of our European trade agreement, CETA. This is a diagnostic test. It's not a drug that needs to be reviewed for safety and efficacy. We know there's going to be a margin of error with any of these test kits, but it is a critical tool that Europe, who had them 5 months earlier, was able to keep some travel and some of the tourism industries going by the effective deployment of rapid tests. Canada was really kind of the last major OECD country to even roll them out. And miraculously, after we started hammering them in the House regularly, suddenly they accelerated the approval. So as you've seen, Jamie, I think the opposition has done our job. We find the Liberals' approach to be secretive. often very confused, always late, whether it was the border, rapid tests, or even the vaccines. Our job is to push for transparency, push for better, attack some of the corruption that we saw with WE. And that's the opposition doing its job as best it can in a pandemic. And I think some of the results in terms of the early vaccine samples, for example, were the direct result of our pushing and pushing and pushing. So Michelle Rempel-Garner, our whole team did a very good job on rapid tests in particular.
Yeah, I agree with you a lot, especially when you were saying that the opposition was really pushing the government to move on a number of these files, because you're right, there wasn't much in the terms of conversation about rapid tests or vaccines or a whole wide range of issues. And finally, during, countless questions and question period and other methods, we were finally getting to see some movement for Canadians. And then the answers started to come out instead of the constant stonewall that you get in question period from this government.
Absolutely. And I've said many times at several of my press conferences, three key tools exist in a pandemic: rapid test and diagnostic, finding out how many people are caught. Vaccinations, obviously a tool that can inoculate people and start us turning the corner. But the third tool, Jamie, is information. The fact that the Trudeau government, shut down Parliament, refused to provide details, was very secretive on the China deal they had for a vaccine with CanSino. All of that adds to confusion about when will the vaccines be available, who will get them first, how much safety review has been done. If people like myself came down with COVID and recovered, do I have the antibodies, therefore I don't need a vaccine, or am I going to be later? Why was the government refusing to have a public plan that was detailing some of this public education? I think information has been a tool that, because of Mr. Trudeau's lack of transparency, has suffered, and it's leading to more vaccine hesitancy. It's leading to people doubting whether they will be able to keep their business open past spring, for example. So I think our continued push for planning, for faster response, for transparency is part of an effective opposition.
Now, one of the other things, just before the break, for the Christmas break in Parliament, one of the things we were, as a team, as a caucus, as the opposition, was really hammering the Liberals about was their relationship with China and the number of failures that they've had with that communist country that has actually hurt Canadian interests in so many ways.
Absolutely. In fact, just last Friday, as you know, our deadline of our motion passed, where we had asked, we'd given the Liberals several weeks to come up with a public statement on whether Huawei should be banned or not from the 5G. As you know, for years, it's been our position that a state-owned Chinese enterprise should not build out our digital economy, the plumbing of our future economy. We also, in that motion, asked for a public plan to combat the rise in Chinese influence operations in Canada, harassing, even threatening hundreds of Canadians, influence operations to try and influence public opinion. Canadians need to not only know that that's happening, but have to see a way for the government to tackle it through immigration, through the immigration system, CBSA, RCMP, all the tools of government. The Liberals failed to do both things. Bill Blair issued some milquetoast press release, and the Prime Minister, who promised a decision on Huawei a year and a half ago, still wouldn't come through with it. So Canadians know that the Trudeau government has been inappropriately close to the Chinese regime from day one. We're the only Five Eyes country that has not made the Huawei decision. We're often seen as out of step with the rest of the Western world on China. We found out that Mr. Trudeau and Ms. Freeland were fighting for the Canadian Armed Forces to train the Chinese military on our soil. Just ridiculous to think that that would be a priority for the Trudeau government when they're holding our citizens hostage, the two Michaels, when they're disrupting trade, when they're imposing a police state in Hong Kong, the situation with the Uyghurs. It's time for Canada and our democratic allies to take a united and principled position to combat the influence of communist China.
It's almost as if they're doing a peace by appeasement strategy here with the government of China. It's kind of frustrating when you see, well, we saw about this time last year or thereabouts, was the issues that we had with our agriculture, not being able to move our product out on a moment's notice, and the list went on. But yet there really isn't some concrete action this government is taking to stand up for themselves and stand up for Canada against China.
You're right, Jamie. In fact, last beginning of December, I think it was, our government and myself as the Foreign Affairs Shadow Minister at the time, passed that motion to create a new parliamentary oversight committee for Canada-China relations to shine some light on the mismanagement of that critical foreign policy issue by the Liberals. Remember, Justin Trudeau handpicked an ambassador, John McCallum, his former minister, to go there. McCallum had to resign in disgrace a month or so after the two Michaels were taken. And there's just been no clear, coherent strategy with respect to China. So we passed this motion. It was the first defeat of the Trudeau government ever, because it was the first opposition win in a minority parliament. And that Canada-China committee, once it resumed after the pandemic closure of parliament, has been really shining the light on some concerning trends, and the fact that the Trudeau Liberals always seem to only care about trade with China for some of their big corporate friends and interests. And I often say, Canada, our values are not for sale. We're free traders, but we can't turn a blind eye to some of the human rights and trade disruptions by China.
Now, let's talk quickly just back to the COVID recovery plan and how the Liberals are dealing with you know, a whole bunch of files up in the air, and a lot of it had to be done very, very quickly. Besides the part about Parliament not being in session so we can actually have some say on some of these programs and have improvements brought in quicker in a meaningful fashion to help Canadians, to help Canadian businesses, we were the only party that was consistently calling for Parliament to stay in session during the pandemic so that we could actually bring relief to Canadians quicker than what was actually happening in this delayed fashion the Liberals gave us.
You're right. One thing Canadians need to remember is the Conservatives have put our country first. We've put partisanship aside whenever it came to helping families and businesses weather, particularly in the first wave. But the knee-jerk reaction for Mr. Trudeau and his group to just ignore democracy and ignore Parliament has been terrible. In fact, it was our pushing that turned the wage subsidy from just a 10% wage subsidy that wouldn't have saved any jobs, quite frankly. We pushed to get it to 75. The very fact that the Liberals took weeks to do that is a big reason why we have several hundred thousand more people unemployed than needed. Businesses were worried, so they put everyone onto the CERB rather than take the wage subsidy in many cases. Since last May, we pushed, as you know, Jamie, for changes to the rent subsidy program, because we all, in all of our ridings, your riding, my riding, coast to coast, we heard about how many landlords were not passing on the benefit to their tenants. And you had small, often family-owned businesses struggling. Had they listened faster, and then had Trudeau not prorogued Parliament, the bill that is going through now to fix that program, we had proposed it last spring. Just think of how many thousands of small businesses might have survived if they had actually listened. And that's what the opposition's meant to do. And so we have voted with them, sometimes, as you know, with very little debate. It's hard for conservatives, fiscal conservatives like us, to vote on a $50 billion package with only 5 hours of debate. We were putting the country first, and we really hoped the Liberals would fix gaps in these programs. Time after time again, it showed they didn't care, and they favored large corporate interest over the small and medium-sized player way too many times. And I think we're going to see a prolonged recession because of their slow and unstrategic approach to the recovery programs.
Well, I think that delayed response, that delayed recovery, might be hindered also the fact that They've decided they are going to push forward with massive increases to the carbon tax. They've already increased taxes a number of times during the pandemic. The carbon tax went up, the escalator tax on alcohol, which doesn't require parliamentary approval, which is something I just can't even explain how frustrated about that I am. There's no time to, in my opinion, there's no good time to increase taxes during a pandemic. Doing it multiple times is actually one of the worst things you can do, and actually hurts the most vulnerable, the people that they say that they are fighting so hard to protect. The carbon tax actually hurts them more.
Yes, and this is something that Mr. Trudeau and the Liberal government doesn't seem to understand. They feel that massive government interference and massive taxation is somehow going to set a groundwork for rehiring and investment in Canada. In fact, they were raising taxes and running big deficits before COVID. We now know they were running a $40 billion deficit in good economic times before COVID hit, and they had raised taxes on people, on small businesses, on the escalator tax on alcohol. They taxed the sharing economy. It's driving jobs and investment out of Canada, especially the carbon tax. A manufacturer in Lindsay or in Bowmanville that may be making something for the auto industry or specialized fabrication, they're competing against shops and mills in Ohio, Pennsylvania, all of these border states that don't have an input price for carbon. So now Mr. Trudeau is going to double or triple that. You'll see the giant sucking sound of jobs and investment running to the south. We're already seeing that. $160 billion of capital investment has left Canada under Mr. Trudeau's watch pre-COVID. So if we want to recover, if we want all families and businesses to crawl up out of the COVID hole that we're in, we need jobs, we need investment, we need risk-taking, and we're not going to welcome that if we're vastly out of whack with the US, if we're not seen as a place where you can invest, get projects built, and earn a return for your capital. So when we win the next election, and we will earn the trust of Canadians ahead of that, we need to really make sure the economic recovery is focused on jobs for Canadians. Doesn't matter what part of the country, doesn't matter what industry, we need people working.
I've often said in this show that jobs aren't just created because a politician says so or a bureaucrat says so or because they believe so badly that something's going to happen. The environment has to be correct to allow private sector growth to succeed. And what you've seen, you mentioned a number of examples, but also in our oil and gas industry, our mining industry, in so many decades past, that has been the staple of our economy, the anchor that which we could build from and have spin-off jobs and opportunities and economic activity. And all of them have been stifled because of this government and their priorities.
100%. Yes. In fact, Canada's early wealth and prosperity was generated from our resource economy. Going back 100 years, the Incos, the Falcon Bridges. I worked in downtown Toronto in the financial community, Bay Street. We would not have that financial center if Canada didn't become an early place for the exploration and financing of prospecting, developing, exploration. And here we are now, Jamie. Now we are a resource exporting country, energy, softwood lumber, minerals, including rare earths, we have the potential there. We are the most ethical producer in the world. There's only two energy exporting democracies right now, Canada and the United States. And we have the largest commitment to carbon intensity reduction, indigenous partnerships. So the world will be consuming more and more resources. And we need to say they should be Canadian resources. If you care about how something was extracted or developed, if you care about partnerships with Indigenous businesses, if you care about companies that will reduce their carbon intensity and have a transparent regulatory system where you can actually trust what the provincial and federal regulators say, it should be our resources that should be the world standard. And we can develop our resources and reduce greenhouse gas emissions at the same time. Mr. Trudeau's approach is to shut everything down to reduce emissions. Our approach is to partner, to be smart. And I think that's something I look forward to the Conservatives putting some bold vision out on.
Many people might realize or might remember that the Asian Infrastructure Bank, which has taxpayer dollars, is actually building pipelines across parts of China, but yet we are hampering our own industry, our own energy industry, where the world could use more, like you said, could use more of Canadian energy, and sends a message to the bad actors to up their game. But yet, again, this government, through policies like the tanker ban, Bill C-69, which is also hurting the mining industry in certain parts, these are just all cascading effects because of bad policy decisions. And with the carbon tax, you know this, Aaron, in Ontario, we've seen that disaster, which was the Ontario Green Energy Plan, which made Ontario have some of the most highest energy rates in North America, pushing manufacturing out the door and pushing more people into energy poverty than ever before. And those same geniuses are now in Ottawa making policy again.
You've described it perfectly. The same people that ran the Ontario vehicle into the ditch under the McGuinty and Wynne regimes are now behind the wheel of the semi-trailer, a Canadian economy, and there's even more damage that they're doing. And what it is it's ideological. It is kind of saying, Mr. Trudeau doesn't like it if you work and get your hands dirty in the resource sector and forestry. We, despite his bromance with Barack Obama, we have no softwood lumber agreement. He had several years to extend the agreement Conservatives had negotiated. He also, in southwestern Ontario, told Canadians that work in the auto and the manufacturing sectors that Ontario needs to move past manufacturing. This is where you see the Prime Minister is totally disconnected from the dinner tables of Halliburton or of Durham, where he doesn't realize that families, the well-being of that family, often centers upon whether mom or dad have full-time work, if they're paying their bills, if they can save a little bit for a vacation when we can go on those again. And the wellness of the families can contribute to strong communities, whether they're small towns, suburbs, or cities. And then that builds a strong country. If you don't allow the opportunity for families to have employment opportunities, you're really setting people back. So Trudeau's approach of picking and choosing what jobs are good jobs, what jobs they approve of, is slowly not just dividing the country, it's also eroding our prosperity. And we're going to be handing our children debt, deficits, and very little opportunity.
I've said many times before, and anyone listening to the show now will recognize this. When the government chooses or believes what they think is product progress or what they believe is the end goal, the funding goes towards projects. It's almost like predetermined innovation rather than opening up to the private sector and allowing the market to decide, which will inevitably create the best product for the best price and the best service. But yet with the predetermined innovation, you almost slow that down because everybody tries to change their model to meet what the government wants, which might not actually be the place you want to go and end up in.
Yes, and you know, nothing shows the failure of the Trudeau government and when it comes to picking winners and losers in the economy better than their war on small business and their super cluster strategy. You know, a term that comes from the 1990s, actually, with Kitchener-Waterloo and the Mars Centre in Toronto, which was funded with early investments by the Mike Harris government. That is going back a generation. They're now going to say, with the super clusters, here's where we're going to see innovation that Ottawa is choosing, trying to, rather than to say, let's encourage investment, let's encourage risk taking, let's have some unique tax programs to incentivize capital into that area. They've come up with an Ottawa knows best buzzword super cluster scene that's been a disaster. I was talking to tech entrepreneurs last week and people roll their eyes at Minister Bain's program. It's like right out of a rewind of the 1990s. And what did they do by attacking small business? They were trying to call small business tax cheats, and they forgot that two-thirds of Canadians work for a small or medium-sized business. So when you're actually causing those businesses to hold on to their investment, their capital more, restructure, or even move, you're actually encouraging fewer jobs to be created. So this Ottawa knows best, tinkering with Liberal insiders, picking what companies they approve of, you know, the Wii contract, Frank Bayless, they give contracts to their insider friends. Canadians have had enough of that. We need to have a level playing field, a competitive economy. We want people to invest here. We've got the most talented workplace. We're strategically centered with trade agreements around the world and a great relationship with the United States. Canada should be a leading jurisdiction for investment. We just have to show that we're open to it.
So we only have a few more minutes left, and it's too bad because I have a whole slew of questions. But topics just crossing the headlines here. Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister, in his year-end interview, seemed to be hinting a lot like he is leaning towards a federal election very soon. What are your thoughts on that? I know your articles, quotes have said you're not exactly looking forward to one here because we are in the middle of a pandemic, but Justin Trudeau seems to be hinting at it at least.
Well, sadly, I've seen how the Trudeau team operates enough to know that they're always going to put their own self-interest ahead of the national interest. As conservatives, we'll always put the country's interests, the well-being of Canadians first. That's why we voted with some of the government programs to provide help. We tried to improve it, why we've pushed for a faster response. You'll remember, Jamie, in October, the Liberals tried to use an opposition motion to create a committee as a grounds to create an election by making that committee creation a national confidence vote that, you know, the government was going to fall over creating a committee. They've been trying to game the system to have an election amidst a pandemic when people are really gathered around the flag and they want the government to succeed. They want us to get past the health crisis. They want us to start focusing on the economic crisis, not to have an election. You know, there's families in Ontario and across the country can have very limited Christmas time with families. Should we be lining up in a month from now for elections? Come on. So I've said, let's put the interests of the country first. Clearly, Mr. Trudeau let it slip that Bill Morneau resigned because he didn't want to be part of an election. It all slipped out inconveniently for Mr. Trudeau. And I think Canadians will see through the cynicism if he tries to orchestrate his own election. The next election should be based on who is best suited to build Canada out of this economic mess we're in. Most of it created by COVID, to be fair. But also, there was already a drift and an uncompetitiveness in Canada because of Mr. Trudeau over the last 4 years. The country is also quite divided, particularly in the West. Who's best able to unite and get the country moving? Again, I'm going to say to Canadians, it's us and the Conservatives. We helped Canada weather the last global recession. We now need a serious government focused on the economy and the well-being of Canadians for the next 10 years, not what happened over the course of the pandemic.
That was absolutely fantastic. I always give people the final word. Every guest gets the final word. So Aaron, I don't know how you build on that or improve to that, but any final words, glad you're doing well.
Well, I'm just so proud of our team, Jamie. We're really a government in waiting. We're united. We're pushing for better ideas for Canada, better response. We're optimistic about our country. It is the greatest country in the world. We've got some challenges, but they're not insurmountable. And we've got amazing men and women as our MPs. We just need to add and have more after the next election. So I'll end with just saying thank you for what you're doing with the Blueprint, and Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and best of health in the new year to you, Julia, and to all families out there, from Rebecca, Molly, Jack, and Wexford and I.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Aaron O'Toole, leader of Canada's Conservatives. Also the Member of Parliament for Durham. I've just lost my voice. Thank you very much for being on the Blueprint. We'll have to get you back on the show again. I know you're busy, but we do appreciate the time.
Thank you, Jamie.
Excellent. And remember, we are not stopping. New content every single Tuesday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Please help us push back against the ever-moving Liberal agenda. Please comment, share, subscribe to this program. If you can't watch it all now on Facebook, please download it on platforms like CastBox, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, you name it, we're out there. 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time, new content every single Tuesday. Remember, low taxes, less government, more freedom. That's the Blueprint. Thanks for joining us.